The following presentation, Gigabit Wireless Networking with 802.11ac, was given by Jason Tyler of Cisco at Network Shop 42 in April 2014.
Sounds like I've got some fairly big shoes to fill, so hopefully I'll do this this subject some justice.
Nice to sneak in and put the lights further up for the cameraman.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So what I'd like to do this afternoon is give you a very fast tour of 802.11ac. I've got lots of slides that I want to try and get across. I haven't got my PowerPoint view that I'm normally used to, so I can't scribble on the slides, unfortunately, and give you some presentations. But we'll go through the slides. They will be rapid, and hopefully I'll crack into the slot that I've got. And well, let's go ahead. So what I'd like to do, what I'd like to go through this afternoon then, is give you a why 11AC, give an overview of the main features of Wave 1, look at the multi-user MIMO, if some of you are familiar with that, and then we'll look at the considerations for Wave 2, which is coming up. So hopefully at the end of it, you'll have a basic understanding of where or what direction we're typically going with 11AC. So why is AC important? So this is probably covering some of the things which Elaine covered in hers as well. The reason why AC is important, because we've all got these smart mobile devices now. Everyone's got one. We've all got them in our pockets. They're small. We take them everywhere with us. And because of that, everywhere we go to a venue, no matter where that venue is, we expect Wi-Fi. Wi-Fi is now part of the parcel of any venue that we go to. We even go into the working environment. So we go into the office, or we go to your university campus, and you can bring your own device, and you expect to, again, connect to that wireless network. And one of the driving forces behind 11AC is because we've all got these devices, and all the apps on these devices now are designed for media streaming, cloud services, online services. So there's a lot more contention, a lot more requirement for internet services. And the main one, to be fair, is video. Video is the killer of Wi-Fi. There's a lot of tweaks that have been done to various manufacturers' kit, which allow video streaming to go across that now. But in essence, it's high-definition video streaming and those kind of services which require the bandwidth. And you simply can't do that with 11AB. In its isolation, 11N, you can do it, some of it, but AC is really going to give you that capacity to do full HD streaming. And where we're effectively going now with the technology, as you can see, all the manufacturers do now have 11AC capable access points, and there are variants of mobile devices out there, so HTC, Samsung, Apple have obviously got theirs as well. They've all got their AC capable devices, which are available on the marketplace now. So you can take advantage of 11AC today. So just to give you a flavor of where we've come from, where we're going to. So if you take that example again, using video as the mechanism for using AC, as you can go back to 1997 when our very, very first wireless came out, 2 megabits was the speed then. What a fantastic speed that was at that time. And you could probably get one standard definition video if you were lucky over that. Coming up to today, 2013, or actually 2014 there, apologies. But you can effectively now get 870 megabits, 400 plus standard definition videos, and 50 plus HD video streams. So you can kind of see where we're going with this technology. So, what's it going to give you? So 11AC in its base form is going to give you the most efficient Wi-Fi standard to date. Without a doubt, it is the most efficient one. It's optimized for high bandwidth applications, and it is noticeably faster connecting, and it will enable a better quality experience for your end users. But the key benefit, if you want to take away anything from this, certainly from a mobile device perspective, is significantly better client battery life. That's one of the benefits that using 11AC will give you. Right, so let's talk about Wave 1 then. So the Wi-Fi Alliance is coming out with two waves of 11AC. So the first wave is available now. So all the devices you see on the marketplace will be accredited or certified to Wi-Fi Alliance's Wave 1 capability. So what's that giving you? That's giving you faster modulation. It's giving you channel bonding up to 80 megahertz channels. and the ability to receive one, two, or three spatial streams. And that's for your access points. For your mobile devices or battery devices, the mandatory rate is one spatial stream. Some devices may go more, but certainly the mandatory rate is one spatial stream. So wave two will be coming along at some point in the future, and we'll touch on that later on in the slides, but we'll kind of estimate at the moment 2014 or late 2014, 2015, possibly wave two will come along. And what wave two will give you is a greater channel capacity of 160 megahertz channels and possibly four spatial streams. So the fundamentals of AC then. Essentially, if you were to use 2.4 gigahertz, you really wouldn't have the channel capacity or the user experience to really use AC in that band. So on that point, 11AC is for the 5 gigahertz band only. So it won't be available in the 2.4 gigs. It's going to give you wider channels. So you'll be bonding. So 11N, if you're familiar with 11N, you can bond two 20 megahertz channels into a 40 meg. So 11AC now is linked to do that to 80 megahertz. And wave two will give you the potential of 160 megahertz. The specification actually allows you to go up to eight spatial streams. But for wave one, 11AC, you will typically get three spatial streams and no more. 11N, strangely enough, allows you to go to four spatial streams, but no one has ever actually deployed four spatial streams. It's quite a complex thing to do in an access point. So at the moment, three spatial streams. Modulation, 256 QAM, we'll come into that shortly. I won't go too deeply into it because it's a subject in its own right, but I'll give you a kind of a brief insight into that. But effectively, that's going to give you 30% more efficiency. Multi-user MIMO, now this is the really exciting bit for Wi-Fi. This is the ability to transmit multiple streams to multiple different clients at the same time. And we'll touch on that as well. And you're going to get increased data rates as well to potentially 6.9 gigs, which is again the standard. Things that didn't make it from 11N. So again, thinking back to 11N, you had a greenfield header. I don't know if anyone's familiar with that. Some vendors did have that in their kit, but it was never readily deployed. And the reason being, it's only for 11N clients only. Clearly, not all environments are only going to have 11N clients. So as a result, 11AC has dropped that. There's no greenfield header in 11AC. As we mentioned earlier, four spatial streams, up to 600 megs. No one's ever done four spatial streams at this time. So three spatial streams will be 11AC wave one. Channel bonding in 2.4, not doing that. So 5 gigs only for 11AC. Explicit beamforming. Now that again was part of the 11N standard, but there were so many different variations of it and so many different vendors implementations of it. There was no one standard, so it was very, very complex to do. So 11N, it was never actually deployed. In 11AC, there is one single standard, and that is now supported in 11AC. And you also get some additional protection, which is carried over into 11AC as well. So just as a reminder then, so this is what the expectations are for wave one. 1.3 gigs throughputs, three spatial streams, 2.6 QAM, 80 megahertz channels, and AC. And wave two, whenever that comes out, we're estimating at the moment 2015, you're potentially looking at a throughput of around about 3.5 gigs, four spatial streams, and the important point, I guess, is multi-user and potentially 160 megahertz channels. So, the table on your left, you can see on the slide at the top, this is representing one spatial stream. But typically in the 11N, you had a modulation coding scheme of 0 to 7, and that was for one spatial stream. So what 11AC is actually adding is adding in 8 and 9. Now, I'll just point this out because it can be quite confusing. So going back to the table on the left, MCS 0 up to MCS 7, and then there was an MCS 8, which had the same specification or same characteristics as MCS 0, but for two spatial streams and so on. And that's how that went down. But what we're doing with AC, we're actually introducing two more. So MCS 8 and MCS 9. MCS 8 and MCS 9 in 11AC are different from MCS 8 and MCS 9 in 11A. So what it's effectively doing is it introducing the 256 QAM capability. And 256 QAM is 8 bits per symbol. For your data transmission. So the just to kind of reiterate that, this is just the chart as you can see there, but the standard does in fact go up to 6.9 gigabits per second. And again, you know, whether we'll see that in wave two or not, it still adds a question whether we're there. So let's go to a quick overview of QAM. I won't make this too deep because it can be quite confusing, but a lot of vendors use that diagram to represent QAM, and that means absolutely nothing to me, or I guess some of you guys may know what it is, but that is 256 QAM. So what is that? In essence, let's go back to the basic modulation first. So let's go to BPSK, which is binary phase shift keying. If I've got my wave, and I know my wave is going to be in a given channel and a certain frequency, if I see that wave, I can say, okay, well, that wave there is going to represent a zero. So that wave at the top will represent a zero. Now, if I invert that wave by 180 degrees, or phase shift it by 180 degrees, I can now say, well, okay, well, that second wave can represent a one. So there we go. I've got my modulation. That's essentially what a modulation is. Modulation is 1 bit per waveform. So everyone knows waveform is representing a bit. BPSK. So, okay, I've got my, now I've got my waveform and I understand the modulation. I've got 2 bits going over that. Why not increase it? So let's increase it. Let's go to QPSK. And what QPSK stands for is quadrature phase shift keying. Now, instead of using my 2 waveforms to represent it, I am now using 4 waveforms. And effectively all I'm doing, as opposed to using 180 degrees phase shifts, I'm using 90 degrees phase shifts. So every 90 degrees, my wave will shift by that 90 degrees. Remember, 360 degrees in a circle, 90 degrees, 4 waves. And effectively, what that does is that gives me 2 bits per waveform now, 2 bits per modulation. So what have I just done? I've just doubled your data rate just by changing the phase of that particular waveform. The diagram to the right is essentially, again, the similar diagram that you saw on the first screen. That is what they call a constellation diagram. That represents QPSK, and each of those dots represents those waves on the left. So, okay, why not go further? So we do. Let's go to 16 QAM. So I get 4 bits per modulation wave. And then let's go to 64, and eventually what AC is giving out now is 256 QAM, which is 8 bits per modulation stream. So in essence, what I've done is I've now got 8 bits of modulation going over the same channel, over the frequency, and effectively, you know, quadrupled your throughput of that particular stream. So just comparing this again, why is this important? Because if we compare 256 QAM to BPSK, as you can see on the left, BPSK, 4 dots, 256 QAM, lots of dots. Unfortunately, I can't represent it on this slide, or can I? Is this a pointer? Can I point with this?
Right. There's a pointer in the slide advance.
Uh-huh. Right, cool. I can't draw on this, but what I can do is, if my wave signal entered that square there, if you can all see that dot, within reason, I would know that, okay, it's not exactly on that dot, but it's within that various vicinity there. So I can within reason say, well, that represents either a zero or a one, you know, whatever that dot represents. But I know within reason it's going to represent that particular phase. The difficulty is, 256 QAM, I haven't got the flexibility now. I can't hit that area because if I hit that area around there, it could be any number of different combinations or bits. So why am I mentioning this? Well, essentially your bit error rate is going to be a lot less or a lot less condensed. So you need to ensure that you have optimum RF conditions to achieve 256 QAM. If you don't have them, then you're really not going to get the throughput or the quality of RF conditions. So how do we overcome that? Well, we use beamforming. So essentially what you typically do is you would send out your broadcast frames on a lower data rate. So in this instance, we're looking at 16 QAM. But to your clients, what you wanted to be able to do is direct the wave to them so you'll get that guaranteed RF signal. So in this case, we're beamforming to that particular client to ensure that they get a better user experience and they get the full capability of that throughput in 256 QAM. Right. beamforming. So, as mentioned, beamforming was part of the 11N standard, but there were so many implementations of it, it was never deployed. This has now been standardized. There is one approved method to do this in 11AC. And essentially what this does, it uses a sounding mechanism, so both the client will send information to the access point, and the access point will send information back to the client, and they'll explicitly say, well, I'm seeing you at this level, how you see me, and they'll say, I'm seeing you at this level, how you see me. So they understand the RF conditions between the two, so they can formulate that beam to that particular client, which is going to be more accurate. So that's in the standard now, it's available now, and that's something that which will be readily used. So why is beamforming important? Well, has anybody heard of this multi-user MIMO? Yeah, familiar with it? Okay. Who thinks it's switching? Is it switching in the RF environment? Good, there's no hands, I'm impressed by that, because marketing have been all over this, and marketing have been saying this is a groundbreaking improvement in the Wi-Fi, and it is. But marketing are saying this is switching in the RF environment, and that's simply just not true. It is not switching in the RF environment. What it's in fact doing is using very, very clever beamforming to send multiple streams to multiple clients. So let's take this example here. What you're effectively doing is if you've got single stream clients, and bear in mind, multi-user MIMO is really aimed at single stream clients. So this is your handheld phone devices and something similar. It is specifically aimed at those. So if you concentrate your beam and your access point can do 2, 3, or even 4 streams, you're effectively wasting all those streams because this particular client can't see those separate streams. They can only see one single stream. Okay, why not use those separate streams to send separate information to separate clients simultaneously? And that's what multi-user MIMO is. It's sending discrete information to each of those users individually at the same time. So in this example, we have the blue user, as you can see there, is sending information to, well, the access point is sent to the blue user at the same time as sending information to the red user at the same time as the yellow user. Now, importantly, what beamforming is doing is something very, very tricky to do. It's creating a lobe in the direction of the blue user, for example. So you've got a directed beam going to that blue user. But at the same instance, it's creating a diminished RF zone or a null zone in the area of the red user. And similarly, it's creating a diminished RF or a null zone in the area of the yellow user. So what this effect is doing is ensuring that you're getting your signal to the blue user, but you're not impacting upon the red or the yellow user. And similarly, the yellow user is doing the same as is the red user. So what happens once they've received the signal? Every transmission over RF has to be acknowledged. And to acknowledge it, these clients are only single stream. They can't talk back using multi-user. So they wait for an opportune space in the RF environment, and when there's a free slot, they will then transmit back to the access point and acknowledge that particular signal. And don't forget, RF is half duplex. So you can only one person can transmit at any one time. So just to reiterate, it's not switching in an RF environment. That is absolutely untrue, but it's a very, very clever way of doing beamforming. Now, this is extremely complex to do. It is a Wave 2 feature. We don't know yet whether we'll see it in Wave 2, but it's certainly there as an option within Wave 2, and we'll have to wait and see whether it actually gets deployed or not. Channel bonding. Okay, so mentioned briefly earlier, 11N, you had your 20 megahertz channels, which are bonded into a 40 megahertz channels, and then what 11AC is doing is bonding 2 40 megahertz channels to create an 80 megahertz channel. So it's essentially the same as coming from a 2-lane motorway up to an 8-lane motorway. So greater bandwidth capability. So we haven't shown on here is 160 megahertz, but that will be a Wave 2 option. So Wave 2 will bond to 80 megahertz channels. So why is channel bonding important? Well, simply put, again, it's going back to your single stream clients, your phones. So the ideal would be to have these phones and have 1, 2, or 3 spatial streams coming from your phones. Now, the problem with that, you've got such a small space in your phone, you can never get the antennas within that device positioned optimally, which is going to then give you your spatial streams and spatial multiplexing. So it's not going to happen in the phone. So the only way that we can achieve the greater throughputs with these single stream clients is to have greater channel bandwidth. And what does the channel bandwidth do to these devices? Well, in fact, it allows your battery powered devices to transmit their signals a lot faster. So let's consider going back to 11 megs, 11B, for example. If you've got this much traffic you want to transmit, if I then say, okay, well, let's transmit over a 54 megabits per second, you know, 11G or something like that, this transmission will take that much time to transmit. But then they say, okay, well, let's do that over 11AC. Now, that original transmission now will take that amount of time. So what's the benefit of that? If we compare 11AC and certainly the data rate specified there, so 433, compare that to 11 megs, what you're effectively doing is you're unable to transmit that 40 times faster than what you would do on 11B. What does that mean for a smart device? It means it's going to preserve your battery life. It means you can go to sleep 40 times more often. You can use your radio 40 times less often. You're going to preserve battery life. So that's the importance of why channel bonding is important for single stream clients and battery devices. Am I running over? Yes, okay. Let me whiz through these. Just a reminder of what to expect for your throughputs and your single stream and laptop devices. I'll whiz through these. Cell size is the other one. Cisco have tested the cell size in their facility in Ohio, between 11N and 11AC. And fundamentally what the takeaway is 11N and 11AC are similar rate range. But of course you've got the 80 megahertz channel within 11AC. So what does that mean? Comparing 11N and 11AC access points with 11AC and 11AC clients, you are effectively getting twice the throughput at all those distances. So it's two times the speed. Now, comparing 11N with 11AC is two times the speed. We're almost there. I think this is the last slide. Second from last, and I'll whiz through, and that'll be me. Channel bonding, channel allocation and bonding. Now, this is the crux of 11AC. As you can see, the dots here were 40 megahertz, 11N, we can have seven channels effectively in the 5 gigahertz band. Now, the reason why that one there is grayed out over channels 120, 124, 128 is those are the DFS channels. Those are the ones which are detected in radar, weather satellite equipment, all that kind of stuff, and that interferes with that. So Cisco, by default, we disable those. You can enable them, but we disable them by default. So what does that mean? When you come down to do 11AC, 80 megahertz channels on the 5 gigahertz band, you've only got three channels that you can effectively use, or three bonded channels, should I say. So what we're effectively going back to is the days of 2.4 and three non-overlapping channels on the 2.4 band. So you are now going to see that in the A band. So three non-overlapping channels. Now in Europe, under the ETSI banner, we are looking to free up and utilize channel 144. It's not available yet, unfortunately, but we are looking into that. And what that will mean is that at some point in the future, you can possibly have a fourth 80 megahertz channel there. 160 megahertz channel, get to wave two, you've only got one channel to use. So there's a takeaway. Last slide. One of the things that wave two is gonna have is a greater throughput on the Wi-Fi. So potentially 3.5 gigs, if not more. And the issue with that is the access points today only have one gigabit Ethernet port. So the options you have is on the access points, you put in a 10 gigabit Ethernet port with PoE 100 meters. But unfortunately, that does not exist in any standard. That is not available in any standard at all. So you can't get 10 gigabits Ethernet port with PoE today. So what some vendors are recommending is you have two Ethernet ports or two wires streamed to every access point. Certainly an option, but if you don't want to do that, Cisco are looking at other ways of doing this, utilizing what's already there, using potentially a single one, but that's all I'm allowed to say, unfortunately, because that's future stuff and we're not allowed to discuss futures. But certainly, if you want to continue using Cisco Kit, I shouldn't be saying this, but yeah, continue to use Cisco Kit. Yeah, we will have an option. Hopefully, that's been vendor agnostic enough, and I haven't gone too much Cisco. So, yes, thank you for your time this afternoon. I'm sorry that's been a bit rushed. I tried to cram quite a lot of information into a short space, but if you want to throw any questions to me, by all means, that's my details. Happy to answer any questions if you want to send an email to me. So thanks very much for your time.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.